Lake Effect continues now on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Bonnie North. Hearing guitar virtuoso and composer Shane Hennessy is magical. It's technique, sure. He has it in spades. But his music goes well beyond playing lots of notes. Even though Hennessy does manage to have an entire band play through his guitar, you'll hear what we mean in just a minute. The 26-year-old is in town for a slew of performances this week, including Tosa Tonight, the Wilson Center Guitar Festival in Brookfield, and at Irish Fest throughout the weekend. He found time to stop by the Lake Effect Performance Studio to share some tunes with us, including this original composition we're hearing now called Effervescence. Wonderful, effervescent Shane Hennessy in the Lake Effect Performance Studio. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much.
Oh, it's such a pleasure. You know, you play with such joy.
Yeah, yeah. It's a real passion for me.
I can tell.
Yeah.
You smile, you're in it. And the minute you started playing, you went to another place.
Absolutely, yeah. I always tell people that, you know, I don't get paid to do concerts. I get paid to travel and eat bad food, and I do the concerts for free.
Well, that's a good way to think about it. You rack up all those airline miles.
Exactly,
You came to the guitar rather late, although you're not that old. But you've been playing since you were four.
Yeah.
But you're so rooted in Irish traditional music. Mm-hmm. This tune sounded like, you know, you were paying homage to that and Chet Atkins.
Exactly.
You were channeling him a little bit.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, Chet Atkins is a musical hero of mine, and I got turned on to him via discovering the music of Tommy Emmanuel. But where the Irish music comes into it for me is, I suppose I started off on the concertina when I was 4 years old. So that was my very first instrument. I learned it in school. And I was taught the concertina primarily by my teachers in school. And then when I was, I think, maybe 8 or 9 years old, I remember my dad used to bring me up to lessons every Monday night, about an hour away from where we lived in Ireland, to Micheál O'Reilly. And Micheál is a kind of a legend in the you know, Irish trad world, as kind of one of the, or if not the top concertina player in the country. So I used to go to lessons with him every Monday night. And then I suppose it was until I did that up until I discovered the guitar. I think I was about 12 years old and I heard James Taylor in a Disney film. I think it was called Remembering the Titans. And there's a scene with a car crash in it. And you hear that famous, the... I suppose the cool thing about it for me was that it was kind of like my first experience with harmony in music, because if you think about Irish music, the way you usually hear it in a session, you hear melody and you hear rhythm. You don't actually, unless there's a guitar player or like somebody vamping chords, the traditional way of Irish music was very much melody and rhythm, and that's it. So that's the way I learned. And I wasn't into any other kind of music. You know, I wasn't listening to what my friends were listening to on the radio or whatever. I didn't like any of that stuff. All I wanted was hardcore traditional music. And so for me to hear the sound, I was like, oh my God, where are all these beautiful sounds coming from? That's really what kind of spurred me on to kind of jump into exploring what I could do on the acoustic guitar. But definitely having the roots in traditional music was like starting at a huge advantage already. I think people who come from a background where they've learned an kind of an ethnic music tradition, you know, be it any kind of musical background, you know, if it's Irish or if it's like West African music or could be kind of like Indian classical music, doesn't matter what it is. If you apply that to kind of more modern ideas, you know, taking stuff from the world of jazz or flamenco or classical, it doesn't really matter what it is. If you can bring your identity into that music, that's when you develop your own voice as a musician, because particularly now in this age where we've got YouTube and we've got every piece of music that's ever been recorded and written at our fingertips for free, it's so hard not to become a copy or a clone of somebody else, you know? And so people who get audiences and people who really move other people with their music, I think, are the people who go out to look for their own voice on an instrument. I mean, you know, you've probably heard hundreds and hundreds of guitar players, but the ones that stand out are the ones that can pick up a guitar and make it sound different to everybody else.
Yeah, it sounds like you. Like, I would not mistake that playing for anyone else.
Yeah, and that's what I strive for. I strive for that in that if you hear me on the radio or if you hear me at a festival in the background or something, you're going to go, ah, that's Shane Hennessy. You know, that's how you know somebody's got their own sound, you know.
So what do you think makes your sound different from, say, other Celtic-based guitarists, fingerstyle guitarists out there? There's a lot of fingerstyle guitarists out there doing interesting things with, you know, the entire instrument becomes a drum as well. Mm-hmm. It's percussive as well as melodic and harmonic. So what do you think your voice is?
I suppose I've drawn on so many musical experiences and I've tried to put them together in a way that I've taken the pieces I like from all those experiences and I tried to do my own thing on the guitar with them. So obviously, in that first piece, Effervescent, you hear a huge Chet Atkins, Tommy Emmanuel influence. I think very much the form of my music and sometimes the kind of the melodic, kind of the prominence of the melody is definitely something that I attribute to Irish music, you know? So it's kind of like I'm in between two worlds. You know, there's the Irish and Celtic music side of me, and then there's also the kind of the finger-picking, you know, paying homage to the kind of the Chet Atkins era of playing, and I'm somewhere in the middle. And while I'm doing that, I'm also trying to bring in modern music that I like, you know, kind of these advanced jazz chord changes, or I'm trying to bring in these interesting rhythms. I think something we take for granted in Ireland when we learn music the traditional way is that we're exposed to so many difficult concepts from an early age, but we don't think of them as difficult concepts, we just do it. You know, I remember sitting in front of teachers and you'd just literally be given the letters of the notes you had to play and you just had to feel it, you just had to work it out. So when I'm playing tunes, you know, it's still in my head, I'll just take the cardboard out of here, I'm still thinking in my head, E-A-E-A-B-A-B-G-A-B-E-E-E-D-B-D-B-A-G-E-D, because that's the way we learned, you know? And that has carried on to all the rest of the music that I now play. So when I'm thinking of melodies in my head, even though I'm thinking of how I want it to feel, I'm also thinking of, oh, well, here's, you know, B, C, D, E, flow, you know. It's just something I think that has carried on since I was younger. But my original point was that we get exposed to timings like 9-8, 12-8, 7-8. You know, we have meter changes. We do modal music as well, which is not something that I ever thought about until I started applying it to jazz. And I thought, oh, this is like what we did, you know, with Irish, you know, as we call it, demixed, you know, which is not major or minor. So we get exposed to all this really difficult stuff from a young age, but we just totally take it for granted because we don't know any different.
Right, and you just absorb it and then figure out how you're using it
exactly.
In your music.
And yeah. I think that's the reason that Irish music translates so well.
Well, the next tune you're going to play for us is a perfect example of that kind of mix, because this is Arabic influences mixed with the Celtic. And this is one of your tunes,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, this is one of my tunes. Yeah, I wrote this after a really amazing trip to Marrakesh. And I wanted to write what I felt like was a theme tune or a soundtrack for the city. I went about finding these kind of Arabic scales or sounds on the guitar, and the tune really grew out of there. And I ended up calling my album Marrakesh, my last album, because I thought that the city itself was a good metaphor for what I do. You know, you've still got a city there that retains the cultures of all the peoples who have lived there. And I was kind of thinking, well, this is what I'm trying to do on the guitar. I'm trying to use my guitar as a canvas for all these different people who have come before me and all these musical ideas that I love. So it all tied together quite nicely.
All right. Well, Shane Hennessy in Lake Effects Performance Studio with Marrakesh.
Thank you.
Shane Hennessy with Marrakesh and Lake Effects Performance Studio. What a fabulous tune.
Thank you. Thank you so
fabulous
much.
Fabulous tune. You were getting some of those quarter tones in there in that Arabic scale, as well as, I have to say, when you get into the more rhythmic part of it, I was thinking, oh my God, that could have been on a Led Zeppelin album.
Yeah, exactly. Kashmir and all that kind of stuff.
Exactly. Exactly. It was like, okay, I know what he's been listening to. it's not just guitar players.
Not at all.
Although,
no,
Jimmy Page is a good one to listen to.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I remember listening to his version of Bert Jansch's Black Waterside. I can't remember what he called it on the album, but I remember myself and a friend of mine sitting down in front of the CD player, trying to work out what he was doing, you know, back before YouTube existed.
Exactly. And I was going to say, you know, I'm old enough where we had to drop the needle on the record
to
learn how to do that.
And slow it down.
And slow it way down, get it down to 16 so you could try to figure out
what was going on. I suppose a couple of things going on in that tune that are kind of sort of invisible unless you're looking for them. So, for example, as you said, like with the quarter tones and stuff like that, that's something that I really got interested in. But obviously with the guitar and the way that the system works with the frets, you can't really get those quarter tones without bending to them, you know. So I found another way of getting them to was literally just before I hit certain chords by bending the guitar neck outwards like that and then bending it back up. And it's only a very, very subtle effect, but that's what gives Marrakesh its sound. When I hear people on YouTube doing covers of that tune, you know, they get the chords down perfectly and stuff, but it doesn't feel right. And the reason it doesn't feel right is you need to put in those extra little kind of the details that I have in there to make it sound, to give it that more Arabic sound. You know, I want it to feel like we're out in the desert, you know. Even things like popping out certain notes. I know in the middle of it when I come back from the here, you know, and it's only a little. And it sounds strange on its own, but in context, stuff like that is what sets an arrangement or a piece of music apart, say me playing it to somebody else. And it's because I'm looking for that detail. That's what I'm focused on. You know, I've practiced it to the point where I could probably play the tune and still do the interview with you here, but that's what I'm focused on when I'm playing.
So when you're writing tunes, you alluded to it a little earlier about, you know, thinking about melodies and pulling all of that together. What is your process?
I suppose I'm a bit different to other guitar players in that when I start writing any kind of music, the guitar is nowhere near me. Absolutely nowhere. And the reason is that I figured out very early on that if I wrote on the guitar, A, it sounded like I was writing a guitar tune as opposed to a piece of music. And B, my hands wanted to do what they already knew how to do. So I wanted to cut that process out totally. So when I start with a piece of music now, it's often me. I could be walking down the street, I could be in the shower, I could be anywhere, and I'll just start singing to myself, or I'll start beatboxing, or whatever. It doesn't really matter what it is. Anything that I can use to get an idea out or to kind of develop upon an idea, I will use. And I'll use the voice memos on my phone. So, you know, I mean, if you took out my phone now and listened to the voice memos, you'd probably want to put me into the asylum. But it makes sense to me. And I can then use those to refer back to and think, oh, that's what I was thinking. And I try and put things together. Sometimes I'll use a program like Logic on my laptop. Sometimes I'll write it down in plain English on a piece of paper. And then when I feel like I've got enough of a grasp of what I want it to sound like, what the main themes are, then I'll bring it to the guitar. And I try to do a guitar arrangement of that piece. And I think a good example of that is there's a tune on my first album called Avenue. And this was a kind of a typical way for me to write a tune. I remember I was just after coming back from New York for the first time, and I was singing to myself, walking down the avenue, killing time. And the melodic idea went that way. So I then thought, okay, well, okay, so then what would I do if I were directing the band? You know, well, if I had a keyboard player, I'd probably get him to play chords. So I'd get him to play an E minor and an A7. But then when you're doing a guitar arrangement, you're trying not to think of those chords. You're trying to think, what would a keyboard player do? So a keyboard player would do a kind of a tighter voicing. So they'd probably do something more like something like that. And then I start thinking, okay, well, if I had a bass player in the band, what would I ask the bass player to do? And again, you'd follow the root chord, so you'd go E, A. But then you're thinking, well, no, a bass player, I'd want them to move it up, or groove it up a bit. So I'd want them to go. Okay, so now we've got these different parts for the band going on. The drummer, I'd want him to keep a really tight. Now it's time to start putting all these things together. So we start with those chords. Now we put in the bass line. Now I want the drummer to get a bit more funky. I want him to put in ghost notes into that groove, right? Which are those little teeny taps that drummers put in. So now the groove without the ghost notes. And the groove with the ghost notes. Now we've got Stevie Wonder, you know? Quincy Jones. And then the melody. So that's
so much fun.
Yeah, that's the process, you know. So I'm not thinking like a guitar player. I'm trying to think like a band leader. I'm trying to think, if I had four musicians in the room, what would I get them to do right now? And how accurately can I represent that on the guitar, or try to recreate that dynamic? You know?
And you don't have to feed the other three guys.
Exactly, yeah.
It's great. You go on tour by yourself.
Can you imagine how much money I'm saving
you
right now?
Amazing. That's a wonderful way to go about it.
Uh-huh.
Because like I'm going back to what you said earlier, is you want to write a song, a tune, and then do an arrangement of it for yourself.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's the way to do it. I mean, I've tried before to write on the guitar, but the problem is then you get locked into the same shapes, and I know this lick, I can stick this in here, and, you know, it's not a good way to write, because I don't think you challenge yourself. There's often things that I come up with and I go, how am I going to do this? Oh, God, I've really backed myself into a corner here. But, I mean, that's how you improve. That's how you get better as a musician. And even from a technical point of view, sometimes you come across something and you go, oh, no, here we go. You know, this is the hard part. But you've got to practice it up. And ultimately, it makes you a better musician approaching the guitar that way. You know, and at the end of the day, I'm not trying to appeal to guitar players. I'm trying to appeal to everybody. You know, Chet Atkins always said, I'm not playing to the guitarists, I'm playing to their wives. And it was the truth. It was the truth. He didn't care about whether what he was playing was the most technical, difficult thing, or if it was something simple. As long as the music came out the way he wanted it to feel, well, then he'd done his job. And I think it's the same thing with me. If the music feels right and you know nothing about fingerstyle guitar playing or the solo guitar approach or whatever, that doesn't matter. If you've had a good time and you enjoy it, that's my job done.
Well, we are so looking forward to hearing you both at the Sharon Lynn Wilson Center, mm-hmm. at the Guitar Festival that's happening there, and also at Irish Fest all weekend. Mm-hmm. Shane Hennessy, what are you going to take us out with?
So years ago in Ireland, my grandfather had a big band, and there was a huge kind of show band, dance band scene in Ireland. And so I grew up listening to a lot of the music that he would have played in the house. And so he was a huge Glenn Miller fan. So I remember shortly after he passed away, I remember hearing American Patrol again for the first time in a long time, and I thought, you know, this would be a really good one to arrange for the guitar. You know, good melodic tune, good chord changes, has all the ingredients for a good arrangement. So I'm going to play that, American Patrol by Glenn Miller.
Irish guitarist and composer Shane Hennessy takes us out with his arrangement of Glenn Miller's American Patrol. He'll perform on Wednesday at Tosa Tonight, on Thursday at the Wilson Center Guitar Festival in Brookfield, and throughout the weekend at Irish Fest. There's more info and all the tunes that Shane played for us today at wuwm.com. Jason Reavy engineered our studio performance.